Welcome to RV Out West. I'm your host, Brooks. My family of four's base camp is located in the beautiful Pacific Northwest, and our RV adventures radiate from there. I'm relatively new to RVing, and a few years ago, I convinced my wife that for an anniversary present, we should buy a used tent trailer from some friends of ours. Ever since then, we have fallen head over heels for the RV life, and we now find ourselves towing a 26-foot Jayco travel trailer. So grab yourself a mug of coffee and join us as we discuss RVing around the West. From sweet camping spots, gear and equipment, to tips and tricks, we've got you covered. We are RV Out West. Joining me is Avanti Lawani, the CEO of Brighter Products, and today we will be discussing RV solar solutions and lithium-ion batteries. Located in South Bend, Indiana, Brighter Products is an experienced leader in developing electronic and mechanical solutions for transportation, education, and government customers. Avanti, welcome to RV Out West. Please tell me a bit about yourself and how you got started in the solar industry.
Sure. Brighter Products is a family-run company. My dad is an engineer. He's actually a mechanical and a metallurgical engineer. We understand how problems can be solved with the choice of design, the choice of materials. And I find that to be very interesting. When you think about solar, and you think about power, and you think about solutions, you know, when you're always in this idea of like, how could that be solved? Right. Or why is that happening? That's how all that happened for me.
Brighter Products, you guys started in 2015.
Yep.
So what is it with solar, and kind of what is it about solar that really resonates with you and the company, but with you? I mean, what juices you in that sense?
What juices me about solar is its versatility and universality of it. So to me, it may be one of the only technologies that we can use now and that future generations will benefit from us using it, but that also previous generations, had they had solar, the history and their context would have been completely different. In the case of the current moment and what really, really sort of revs up my engines is that it is a solution for our power needs, and it directly relates to autonomy and independence. It is directly connected to that in an RVing context. I think that that's what really is extraordinary about solar in a way that no other technology could be.
If somebody is starting to kind of think about maybe adding a solar system to their RV, kind of what would be the greatest consideration for one of those RVers to think about when they're looking to build out their system?
Probably the most important thing to do is to pace yourself, because you're going to have to work through a specific equation. And if you took the time to work through this equation, everything will fall into place. And the first consideration is your outlook. What do you want to do? What is your electrical goal? The second part of the equation is, how much do I need right now? How much do I use every single day? And then when you sort out how much you use, you can figure in the next important variables, which is, how many solar panels can I install? How many batteries for the house side of the coach? How many batteries do I have in my compartment? And then where am I going to be located primarily in my travels? So this equation of how much power I can generate, how much I'm using, and where I want to be, that equation in consideration will never let you down.
So then with that, how does somebody go about trying to think about kind of how much power they're using? If, you know, I don't even know how much I use, you know, I just shore power plug into 30 amps. And, you know, if I have yet to blow a fuse, but if I do, I have spare fuses and I get, you know,
But so how does one kind of begin to get that base calculation? What are your recommendations or suggestions for that?
What we recommend people doing is getting a piece of paper out, waking up in the morning and saying, oh, this is the first thing I did was I turned on my coffee pot. And on the back of the coffee pot ought to be an electrical label. And it should say how many watts you're using. And write down coffee pot watts, 8 minutes. And do that for everything that you use during the day. And then don't forget to include if you have more than one of those items. So for instance, in many RVs, for instance, there may be two TVs or two lamps or two of something. Be sure to multiply that out too. In terms of hours, calculate all of that. And at the end, you'll have the kilowatt hours that you ended up using that day. And do that for a few days and see where you are. Now, what's very useful in these kinds of calculations is to have a basic idea of where you're headed. So on average, if you don't use air conditioning, the average RV class A or C, they will often use about 10 kilowatts a day. And then the average RV, if you use air conditioning, it will often use about 20 kilowatts a day. So figuring out where you are and knowing where the average parameters are will be a very good guiding measurement for when you sit down and talk to somebody about a solar system.
Gotcha. It's great. That's great information. So, and I'm assuming in the brighter products also, when I see like, you know, our travel trailer came with solar ready, you know, but so what does that specifically mean? And do the brighter products then initially kind of plug and play into that base system of, you know, those RVs now that come out and say that they're solar ready? Is it a pretty plug and play situation?
It depends. It's a very good question. It's a very important question. And it really depends on each make and model of RV. We've seen solar ready to mean perhaps five different things. So say, for instance, solar ready wall socket. In that situation, what the RVing company has done is saying, oh, we think you're going to end up using a mobile solar kit, and we will make a wall socket connection for you, and you'll be able to directly power your laptop, your cell phone, something like that. That's considered solar ready, but it might not have any connection to your battery compartment. So
interesting.
Yes,
okay.
Yes. So there's an interpretation here of words solar ready. It is actually solar ready. But if you were thinking that, oh, now I can mount panels on my roof and my battery is going to receive charge, that's something.
It may not be the case.
It may not be the case. And it's worth a lot of analysis and some observation what you actually have. In some cases, in the roof mounted socket, solar ready, what can happen is they may have sort of like a center where you might be able to put in solar wires. In some cases, we've actually even seen the solar wires come down. So the wiring was there. In some cases, believe it or not, we've seen RVs and all they had were plugged holes. And
there was no wire. There was no wire. So
we didn't have to drill any holes. But from their perspective, that meant solar ready.
I don't have solar currently on my travel trailer. Something I've thought about looking at, again, like I even have said to you previously, you know, I'm a big fan of solar. I have a 7.5 kilowatt system on my rooftop here in the Pacific Northwest. And it's funny, I just calculated my total electricity bill for all of 2020 from my home, and it was $457.
Wow.
My solar production's been fantastic, even on overcast, rainy, wet days. But so somebody who's thinking about getting solar started up for their coach, but what kind of would be a good entry level starting?
Sure. Of course, it depends on what RV you have, because there's some RVs where there's only room for one battery. And there's a natural limit on how many solar panels you can get up on a roof. There's already so many different appliances up there, vents, skylights, air conditioners. There's actually very limited, on some RVs, very limited amount of solar that could go up there. So say, for instance, two batteries, a solar charge controller, and maybe a panel or two. Say, for instance, we lay down tracks so we don't have raw wire, which a lot of installers don't take that step. We you know, the rubber off of an electric wire, it is sensitive to ozone. So not having a specific type of track that is meant to protect that wire in weather is just an example of a detail we would take. But
that's great.
$5,000 to $7,000 is a very good sort of rule of thumb if you're looking at a configuration where there's two lithium ion batteries, a solar panel or two, and a solar charge controller.
Let's start, now that we talked a little bit about some of the lithium ion batteries, let's get into that a little bit more. I understand that your batteries are able to opened up and worked on internally. Tell me a little bit, because that's pretty interesting and that seems pretty unique to you guys. So tell me a little bit about your lithium ion batteries.
Sure. So this battery, when you look at it, you can drill straight down to the engineering behind it, and that we, you know, it's our choice in materials. So it's not actually in a plastic housing. We're the only ones that house the battery in a non-conductive steel housing. And what that, the effect of having it in a non-conductive steel housing is that we can open it up just the same way you could open up the hood of your car. We can take a look and see the different components in there and see what has happened and what conditions it's been through. We recently had a case, our very first one, where a customer called up and said that his RV was in a fire, and they found out the fire was from a crack in the exhaust pipe, which had shorted out some wires underneath it. But he said, my battery stopped charging. Would you mind taking a look at it? And we said, of course, we would take a look at it. So he brought back his two batteries that he thought weren't working. We unscrewed them. We took a look at the boards, and it was certified by a third-party lab that the boards had actually prevented fire damage from going through the circuitry.
Wow.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because.
Very cool.
Yeah. When there is a fire in any place where there's electricity, the way wiring is affected is that there will be an overcurrent going through the lines, which will damage all the electrical components on that line. And so your outlets, for instance, and other devices that may not have the protections included in them. And then also there is a temperature current. There is a heat current that travels through and melts off rubber and a lot of plastic and rubber components as it's going through the line. In our case, our battery was able to sense on its board, there's a chip on it, and it was able to sense that there's an overcurrent and then there's a heat current coming towards it, and it said, nope, we're turning off. And it literally opened its circuit up. And we were able to switch out that particular board, and his batteries just started working back up again. And we installed them.
That is amazing. That's very, very cool.
I tell you, we never expected it that it would ever be needed, that particular circuitry. We were hoping it would never be needed, but yep. You know, those are just a few of the ways our battery is different.
You know, unlike a traditional AGM battery or some of those other batteries on the market, the lithium ion batteries, you can fully discharge them without necessarily causing damage to the battery. Is that correct?
Yes.
In my thinking?
Yes.
Okay.
We often say, you know, you might want to cut it off at 20% or 10%. We also know that there are situations where you can't. There are situations where you just can't stop. And the battery will charge right back up. There's an embedded LCD screen.
Yeah, I was going to ask you about that. I saw that on your website. I was going to ask you about that. So yeah, definitely. Tell me. I was intrigued. I've never seen anything like that. So tell me a little bit about that. That's cool.
I tell you what, it is one useful little gadget. At first glance, some people think, oh, it's not that useful, but my word, does it make a difference? So there's an LCD screen. It looks very much like, perhaps the size of about 3 stamps. And it's flat to the battery. There's nothing that like gives it more mass. And it tells you very critical pieces of information. It tells you, like your cell phone, how graphically, how much power you have left. It tells you in a percentage how much power you have left. The number of amp hours currently available, the watts you're using, and its current voltage. And on the reverse side, when you hook up our batteries to a solar charge controller and then connected to solar panels, you can see how much is charging through. So we've seen in northern Indiana in the winter, where January there was, we ran a test, we were getting 20 amps of power coming through one solar panel going down to one battery. And we could see that number there because it wasn't hooked up to a load. There's just having that visibility into how much power you have makes a big difference.
That's great. Yeah, that is pretty amazing. Let's talk about the filthy word of generators. Come on. Probably a swear word around your office. Let's talk about that filthy word of generators. What really is kind of your take on the whole generator versus solar kind of debate? If one's looking at one or the other or whatever, what, you know, do you think, is there a time and place for generator that maybe solar can't fulfill a particular need? And so generators would be better, or no, you know what? Solar can long live past a generator because you don't need to be carrying around a jerry can of fuel or whatever it might be. So
from our perspective, it's all about what the RVer needs. We are finding that if you can install the right number of lithium ion batteries, we're finding that our batteries, you can indeed run smaller air conditioning units and you do have the power. So for instance, there was an installation we did last year, and on our batteries without solar, there was an 11,500 BTU air conditioner, and it ran for 6 hours and 43 minutes on 4 of our batteries. The rechargeable technologies, the solar and then the lithium ion batteries, are catching up to the capacities of the generator.
Tell me now a little bit more, like, since launching Brighter Products in 2015, what's been the greatest struggle for launching or the greatest, you know, challenge that you guys have all had to overcome in that standpoint?
You know, the challenges have been shifting, just like I think the sand on a beach since we started. The very first thing is we saw lithium was going to be an important thing for many people's lives. And when we started, when we debuted our lithium ion battery, we had huge national acclaim, but people didn't think it would really make that big of a difference. People really didn't think they were safe. And I think that was our very first big challenge, is to demonstrate that it's a very safe and a very stable technology. The second challenge I think we're in right now, the second phase of challenges that we're in, is that the engineering makes a difference. Right now, we are seeing lithium ion batteries for just a few $100s. And we've taken those batteries apart. It's very important to make this technology accessible. And when pricing goes down, it does make it more accessible for the goal of producing stable power for the long term. I think there needs to be a greater understanding of how a battery works, how materials make a difference, how the circuitry matters, and how all that adds up to a higher performing battery. It's okay if you're new to power. It's okay if you're new to energy and solar and lithium batteries. With a little bit of conversation, we've noticed that describing it in certain ways, understanding it is accessible to everyone. There's a wonder in it. And I hope everybody gets to experience that. I'm a big lover of trivia. Can I kick in a couple of trivia factoids for everybody?
Absolutely, please.
I just love trivia. So, so imagine you have a square yard, roughly speaking. It's actually a square meter, but it's very close to a square yard. Imagine you have that much square yard of Earth. How much solar power do you imagine falls on that plot of Earth?
In terms of like...
How much watts?
Volts?
How many watts?
Or how much watts? 280.
Go up.
More?
Yeah.
Double, like 560?
Go up.
1,000?
1,000. It's about 1,000 watts of power falling down on like that spot.
That is ridiculous. I had no idea. No idea.
I know. It's like a kilowatt of power. Like right there. How much solar power will a full moon produce?
You know what? I've never checked.
It's awesome.
I've never checked. Are we talking the same square meter?
Yeah.
100.
Go down.
50? You're killing me, Smalls. What? No, okay.
It's about 10. 10 to 12 watts.
Okay, but still, hey, that's something. You can charge in the middle of the night. That's something. Yeah.
Yeah.
What is your favorite national park? Pigeonhole, one national park. No. You get one. Yep. One national park.
Okay.
And I need to know what it is and why. So
the National Dunes shoreline, the Indiana National Dunes shoreline as a national park. I spent so many, many hours of my life, all throughout my life, at the dunes. We love it in this area. It's the closest national park to us. And I think it only became a national park about 2 years ago. So it's very, very new. And people don't know that come to Northern Indiana, there is actually a national park for you to enjoy your RV in. I mean, it's just, it's otherworldly.
Oh, that's so cool. That is very cool. Has it been a national monument then before that? Before, was it just part of your state park system before?
Indeed, it was part of the state park system. And when that national park sign got placed in,
it was like
Christmas and New Year's and 4th of July, like put all that together. And that's how exciting
it was. That's what a wonderful treasure to have in your backyard and to celebrate. So that's great. If I want to get Brighter products, do you have local dealers out in Washington State or here in the Pacific Northwest? Do I need to make a road trip out to South Bend? Like, what's kind of the options of, you know, or is it pretty plug and play? Just order online, ship it to my house, and I do the install. Kind of talk me through that real quick.
We don't have anyone out in the Pacific Northwest. So there's two, three primary ways that people might get our batteries. One is you can certainly order it from our website, and we will, with a scheduling, an appointment, we will provide that engineering support for you to install before you make your purchase and after you make your purchase. And that's at no charge. So you can be assured, if you're a do-it-yourselfer, you can be assured that you're doing things well. We really highly recommend coming out to Northern Indiana if you can.
Road trip.
Yeah, it's a gorgeous, and we have a national park.
And now you have a national park. Road trip, bring it on.
Yep.
What is, just time-wise, I mean, how much time is it for your team to do the install? Is it a couple hours? Is it a day? What's average install?
Average install with a team of two people. In an RV that's been in good or average maintenance is about 8 to 12 hours.
Avanti Lawani, CEO of Brighter Products, thank you so much for taking the time out of your busy day to chat with me about RV solar, lithium ion batteries. I am so grateful that you took the time to speak with me. Thank you so much.
Thank you. It's been a joy.
It's time for our pit stop. And one of the great treasures here in the Pacific Northwest is our ferry system. During this pit stop, we will share with you everything you need to know to navigate the Washington State ferries safely and efficiently. Joining me today is David of the Washington State Ferries. He has been with the ferry system now for, what has it been, about 4 years?
About 4 years.
Yeah, about 4 years. And David has kindly agreed to kind of talk to us from an RV perspective a little bit about what all is involved with bringing an RV, travel trailer, fifth wheel, motorhome, et cetera, and the likes onto a ferry boat. What you might need to know as far as what's involved with cost. Do you need reservations? Do you not need reservations? So, David, thanks again for joining us.
You betcha. You betcha. So, guys, basically, let's say, you know, you're going to take your RV. You're going to utilize one of our ferries here in the greater Puget Sound area. A lot of our routes do not require reservations. However, if any of y'all decide you want to do Port Townsend, Coopville, or if you're looking to travel into the San Juan Islands, you are definitely going to want to make a reservation for that rig of yours. A lot of our fares are based on length. You know, expect to pay a little bit more than you would for your average standard car and driver. Definitely want to know the length of your vehicle because, again, it's going to ask you how much room you're going to be taking up on the boat. That premium space there in the tunnel where we park the RVs, definitely go to the ferry's website, make yourself a reservation.
What kind of lead time would you recommend? So if I'm wanting to take a trip in the summer during kind of peak travel season, man. When should I be booking my reservation? Are we talking like March, April for a July, August sailing? Or is it more like I can do May, June for a July, August sailing?
Yeah, I would just say as soon as we make them available. It's going to be a couple months in advance that we open up those reservations for the summer. They go in stages. They're going to release X amount right away. They're going to hold some till, say, a week before. And then another batch is going to get released 2 days prior.
Okay.
Guys with the Class A's, keep in mind, you only have that one exit on the one side. So that's going to determine where we're going to park you guys on the boat. Keep in mind where your mirrors are at. I see a lot of people banging up their mirrors just because, again, they're not really used to having them hanging out there. Another thing we see quite a bit, too, you may consider what time of day because of the tides. If you have a really long overhang on the back there or just a longer coach or something along those lines, again, you're going to want to mind the tides because we do have some good angles when it comes to that bridge.
Let me ask you this. So I might have some extra fuel that I've got for my generator. You know, I've got two just standard 20-pound propane tanks, but others might have those larger ones.
Yeah. So on the fuels, on the flammable side of things, right? So when it comes to propane, so RVers, we're not going to have anything to worry too much. But the Coast Guard really appreciates it when those propane tanks are actually hard plumbed into the vehicle itself. So no limit on your propane amount in that case. However, if anything loose, such as your barbecue tanks, your spare fuel for your Jenny, things along those lines, we do have limits on the portable flammable items, such as you're all limited to up to 12 gallons of gasoline. No containers over 6 gallons. They all have to be UL approved containers. So we can't do the quick pour types like you're going to find in the, sledding community or the motocross community, things like that. It's a certain kind of fuel can. Has to be Coast Guard approved. We deal a lot with the Coast Guard.
So let's talk shoulder seasons. What if, you know, I don't have children in school and I'm more of a retirement age or, you know, looking to travel kind of in a post-Labor Day, September, mm-hmm. October. You know, the things here in the Northwest, our weather is still really beautiful in September and October. Does ferry traffic peak kind of die down a little bit after Labor Day? Are reservations still required? What's kind of the suggestions there?
Yeah, you know, when it comes to reservations, I'm always going to recommend the reservations, especially for larger vehicles. Yes, it does die down once the kids go back to school. Absolutely. Just especially in the San Juans now. Yeah. In the San Juans, Coopville, we see a marked drop off of volume when the kids go back to school. Again, they're more tourist-oriented, more destination-type-oriented travel rather than, say, our commuter terminals. So, yeah, it does. The shoulder seasons are fantastic. Matter of fact, on the Coopville run, we do add a boat to bring it into two-boat service during the shoulder season. So you're going to not only see that during the summertime, but also, again, a little bit in the spring and in the fall.
That's great.
Mm-hmm. And also, too, up in the Anacortes side of things, in a typical year, you're going to see a schedule change for summer and also spring and fall. However, this year, we're doing something a little different because of the pandemic. We're actually going to operate what we're going to call a peak season beginning May 9th. So essentially, plan on that second boat in Coopville. Plan on the full summer schedule. Well, modified summer schedule for Anacortes. We're not going to do Sydney, unfortunately, this year.
Are they bringing in those boats earlier than they normally do because of the pandemic, or is this a little later than they normally would?
It's actually, we're actually beefing up our service out of the islands. We've been on a modified winter schedule now since the pandemic started, and it's you know, it's definitely a stretch when you're trying to do peak or more intense volume on a winter schedule. So, yeah, we're going to open it up here come May 9th. And, of course, you know, we're already starting to see the volume of people traveling around. So
let me ask you this. Mm-hmm. What routes require a reservation?
Mm-hmm. It's Port Townsend, Coopville. So to get out the Olympic Peninsula, for sure. And then, yeah, anything out of Anacortes. So Lopez, Shaw, Orcas, Friday Harbor, and hopefully again eventually Sydney. The website there is going to have a lot of useful information. It's going to also be where you can go to get those reservations for the San Juans or for Port Townsend, Coopville. Definitely pay attention to when you need to arrive at the terminal for that reservation, though. We break a lot of hearts because people are late for those reservations, and unfortunately that puts them into standby at that point. And I know it's a real drag when you have a big old 50-foot long whatever that you're looking for 50 feet worth of space on a boat during a nice summer day.
Okay. All right. Well, again, thank you so much, David, for taking time to speak with us here today at RV Out West. I really appreciate it. And
got
thanks
it.
For your time. Have a great day.
It's been a pleasure.
Thanks so much for listening today. I would like to encourage you all to please subscribe to the show and to leave a review. In our next episode, we talk about campground games, and I've got one game that I'm sure a lot of you may not have heard of, so you won't want to miss out. Plus, in our pit stop, we talk water weenies, and we will cover all the details of how to make these inexpensive water toys. Thanks so much for listening to RV Out West. Join us again in 2 weeks with our next episode. Please like and subscribe to our podcast on iTunes or wherever you choose to get your podcast so you never miss an episode. And I sure would appreciate if you left a rating or a review of the show. Special thanks to Scott Holmes Music for providing the intro song, We Are One. RV Out West can be found on Instagram and Facebook, where you can interact with us and follow along on our RV adventures around the Pacific Northwest. So get out there, explore, and go see what's beyond the horizon.